support for this KQED podcast comes from ACT, presenting Stephen Sondheim's rapturous musical, A Little Night Music. Featuring an all-star cast, A Little Night Music begins performances at ACT's Geary Theater May 20th. ACT-SF.org.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning in our opening hour, a new comprehensive study reveals that taxpayers pay over $500 million each year in Santa Clara County for homelessness when social services, jail stays, emergency room, and mental health care costs are all added up. We'll discuss the study and what it indicates should be done for the homeless. Then at 9:30, since mid-April, 12 whales have turned up dead on beaches here in Northern California following the end of the annual migration of thousands of gray whales. But those whales include as well a sperm and a humpback and an orca, and we'll investigate what may be behind the possible causes of the death of whales. Join us for Forum. It's next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Santa Clara County has the seventh largest homeless population in the United States, a problem that costs the county around $520 million each year. That's according to a new study. The report followed more than 104,000 homeless people over a five-year period, taking into account costs such as emergency room visits, mental health care, and jail time. And advocates say the annual price tag makes the case for housing homeless people instead of paying for other related costs. We can take a look in this hour, detailed look at not only the report, but at homelessness in Santa Clara County. And let me tell you who is joining us for this half-hour segment. Jennifer Loving is executive director of Destination Home, a private-public partnership focused on ending homelessness in Santa Clara County. And Jennifer Loving, welcome to the program. Good morning to you.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Key Lee, who is director of the Office of Supportive Housing for Santa Clara County. Key Lee, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
And good morning to you. And both Key Lee and Jennifer Loving join us from the South Bay this morning. Jennifer Loving, let me begin with you. I know you tracked, as I said, 104 homeless in the county between 2007 and 2010, and the numbers come out in cost to $520 million a year. But there's also this persistent top 5% of the population, about 2,800, and that figure goes to $83,000 each year for each of those that you tracked. These costs are extraordinarily dramatic, and what you're saying, in effect, is save the taxpayers money by providing homes for these people.
We are. You know, it's not uncommon to find that the longer that people are outside, the more that their crises exacerbate and they need help. And the way that they access that help is through our high-cost public safety net systems, you know, hospitals, emergency rooms, corrections, mental health facilities, and those have a hefty price tag.
You did a number of these persistently homeless people and found the public costs, again, about $62,000 a year, but dropped when they found housing to less than $20,000. Do I have those figures right?
Yeah, that was a cohort of long-term homeless people that our community was collectively housing over the last few years. And so that was our Housing 1000 campaign. And of that number, there was a percentage of people that were in that high cost grouping. And once we housed them, we were able to then look at their post-housing costs by estimating their service reduction using data from Los Angeles matched pairs. And that costs are estimated to drop substantially, which, again, is no different than we see in other parts of the country. Once people have stability of housing, they stop using these kinds of services.
That data, we should mention, Keeley, came from the Economic Roundtable, which is L.A.-based, and also provided you not only with this data, possibly the most comprehensive study of its kind, but also a great deal of additional information of cost, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we, the county, have been working with Economic Roundtable for the past 3 years to provide them with these linked records of our administrative databases to provide the demographic diagnostic information on these individuals as well as their service utilization.
Well, if the conclusion here is to get these homeless into housing, there are, first of all, limited public funds. There's scarcity of affordable housing, and there's low vacancy rates, particularly in that whole Silicon Valley region where cost for housing is so high. So I guess at this point you're looking at a kind of triage or priority system?
Right. I think that one of the ways in which we can address homelessness and to optimize public funds is to essentially apply our very scarcest and most costly resource to those with the greatest need and to yield the greatest, you know, cost savings or cost avoidance for the public. And
so forgive me, this would mean the disabled and long-term homeless.
Right, the persistently homeless individuals who have high costs. And so out of this cost study, the next step over the next several months is to develop what we call a triage tool or assessment tool that would help us identify those individuals and then, you know, target and prioritize permanent supportive housing for them.
How do you find some of these individuals, Jennifer Loving? I mean, a lot of them are living in shadows and they're off the grid. And how do you locate them?
Well, the tool that Key mentioned will help us a great deal. When people access these high-cost systems, we'll be able to identify them and screen them. But I think, you know, the basic premise is that we don't think anybody should be living outside. And when we look at high costs, that often basically equates to high suffering. And Destination Home is a program of the Health Trust, which is focused on increasing health for everyone in our community. And we can't do that while we're leaving a majority of our homeless population outside suffering on a daily basis.
One of the things I believe that came out of this study was a surprising high number of homeless women.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was something that was atypical to the statistics across the nation, really. And we don't have the answers for why that is yet. That's something that really needs more looking into. But we can assume that by having the amount of data that we had, you know, over 104,000 people were part of this study, and that was over 25 million different records that were analyzed to produce this information. And so I'd like to think that this is because we had such a diverse and large cross-section of samples to be able to identify women, but it's definitely a problem. We don't know why there are so many women in our study, but it's definitely something that needs more looking into, and we definitely need to address that because women are especially vulnerable.
Excuse me, do we have a number of those vulnerable women?
It's about 50% of the persistently homeless were women in our study.
And you mentioned the national implications of this study. San Jose, or Santa Clara, I should say, the county is the seventh highest total. I believe the number right now that you have is at 7,567. That's according to a congressional report on homelessness. If it's the seventh highest city, what kind of broad application does this have for homelessness throughout the United States, here in the Bay Area and beyond? Well, let me see if I can frame that to be more specific. In other words, can we take a study like this and say, okay, we can save taxpayers an enormous amount of money if we put people into housing, but will the same paradigm apply throughout major cities in the United States? Since Santa Clara is, in some ways, it's Silicon Valley, it's unique in many respects.
Well, Michael, this I think that it does have application. First, you know, the notion that a small percentage of individuals who are persistently homeless have the significant disproportionate impact on our system is generally not new. We find that in other settings, healthcare, Medi-Cal utilization, things like that. But in permanent supportive housing for chronically homeless individuals or persistently homeless individuals is a recommended strategy that most communities are pursuing. What I think this study does is it helps other jurisdictions, counties, and cities to some extent, know that the linking of records, the identifying of the targeting of these high-cost individuals can be done. And hopefully our tool, there's other tools in, for example, San Francisco and L.A., that perhaps our tool and our lessons could be applied, you know, to other communities as well.
Well, this is and has been for quite some time a social justice issue, but here's actually some verified proof that by putting people into housing, you can actually not only, of course, ameliorate the homeless problem, but save money, save taxpayer money. Wonder what you, our listeners, and we are listened to throughout the United States, think about this study, and you may want to weigh in here, or if you have questions or comments, we'd certainly like to hear from you. Our toll-free number is available now. That number is 866-733-6786. Particularly, obviously, like to hear from people in Santa Clara County, but this new study, which has been called the most comprehensive ever on the cost of homelessness, is what we're talking about. And again, you can join the program and join the conversation. Toll free, 866-733-6786. There are other ways, of course, that you can let us know what's on your mind or bring your questions or comments to the fore. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, but we do welcome your involvement in the program. And let me just, before I begin taking your calls here, Jennifer Loving, go back to you and find out, when the jungle clearing went on, the jungle was an encampment along Story Road in San Jose. There were 300 people who were displaced. Have you found places for those people to be for the most part, or are they still part of this number of homeless in Santa Clara County?
Thanks, Michael. When the jungle was closed, you know, that's a great example of, we have about 300 encampments across the county, so that was one probably by far our largest. And before it was closed, there was a collective effort to house a lot of people that were living there. Over 160 people were moved into housing before it was closed, but there were definitely people that weren't. And today, we have a lot of people from the jungle that have housing vouchers that if landlords were willing, we could move them into housing today. And that's part of the problem here, is that the subsidies that we have from the federal government and locally don't compete with the current market rents. And if landlords were willing, we could house more people immediately.
You have a lot of wealthy people, especially in Silicon Valley. How much is the private sector contributing to reducing the number of homeless or helping the kind of problems we're talking about here? Jennifer?
So far, I don't feel like this issue has made it to the top of the radar in the private sector. I think for a long time, homelessness has been seen as an intractable issue, something that doesn't have a solution, nothing more than a charity model. And what we're trying to do with this study is show that there is not only a cost-effective solution, but there is a way to solve homelessness. It's not complicated. It's a home. And by working together, the public sector, the county, the city of San Jose, and others have been really digging in and investing significant amounts of money into permanent supportive housing, but we need the private sector to match that and work with us. And without that, you know, we have a complicated problem of having some of the most expensive land and real estate in the nation. And so we can't, we have all of the resources here to end homelessness, and we have some of the largest problems here too.
And what about, Keeley, homelessness prevention? I know there are programs for veterans, there are programs for those who were released from foster care. There's even some attempt at helping those who miss, say, one rental payment and find themselves homeless.
Yeah, as this report indicates, there is a wide range of need among people who find themselves homeless. Not everyone needs indefinite services and subsidies to make their rent affordable. A lot of people can benefit from short-term rental assistance and homelessness prevention. In the county of Santa Clara, we have had a long history of providing homelessness prevention services and rapid rehousing programs. We are trying to expand those and incorporate those into our network of programs for homeless persons.
And again, Keeley is the director of the Office of Supportive Housing in Santa Clara County, and Jennifer Loving is executive director of Destination Home. That's a public-private partnership focused on ending homelessness in Santa Clara County. Let me go right to your calls, and we'll take a call right away from San Jose. Elizabeth, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment. My brother suffered from bipolar disorder, and he was homeless off and on, jailed many times, hospitalized many times, and also was in group homes. And the group homes, I'm sorry, but they were not good. And then finally, just recently, this is in Texas, after his last hospitalization, he got referred to this housing situation where he has his own room, his own bathroom. They provide three meals a day. They monitor his medication so that they make sure he takes his medication. They provide laundry services and help him keep his room clean. And he's stable and happy for the first time in years.
This is a real success story, Elizabeth, yeah?
Totally. And I just love that model where they're saying, okay, you can have your own room, your own bathroom. We're going to provide you 3 meals a day. We're going to monitor your medication. They're wonderful. And he's staying on his meds and he's staying housed and everything is much, much better.
I'm really glad to hear that story. And I thank you for telling it to us. And Jennifer Loving, how in the long run, in the big picture, how practical is this kind of success story?
Elizabeth just really elegantly described the Housing First model and showed us how it's working for her brother, but really in practical terms, housing is medicine. And once people who have, you know, complicated health issues or even that don't, that just need a home, have the stability of a home, recovery happens. And that is a perfect example, Elizabeth. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah, thank you, Elizabeth. Yeah. I much appreciate your calling in and good luck to your brother. And maybe get another caller on here. Fred, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, I have a sciencey question. I was wondering about, like, you talked about the ad, it was about 32,000, and people before, when they were on the streets, were talking about 62,000. I was wondering, what's the average, and how long did the study go? So if it was 62,000 that year, you looked at it 1 year, for example, and then the next year, maybe it just went back to the average, back closer to 30,000 or something like that. How did you control for that so you were sure that this wasn't just something that happened, would have happened anyway?
Yeah, we get back to the economic roundtable and how this data was processed. Keeley?
Yeah, I think one of the things that economic roundtable tried to impress upon us was that they did try to look at individuals who were persistently homeless and whose costs or utilization were in the top 5%, not just in a one-year spike, you know, one incident, but to identify individuals who would be in that high cost, that 5% over a long period of time. And so those are the individuals that we really want to target for that, for permanent supportive housing.
And Fred, I thank you for your call. I want to get as many of you on here as I can. David joins us next from Palo Alto. David, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking the call. I'm originally from Provo, Utah, and I'm not sure if the if your guests or any of the callers listen or watch the Daily Show on Comedy Central, but a few months ago, they actually did a satirical piece on what Salt Lake City's doing to help drive down homeless folks in that area, and they are giving free housing, and it's been proving to be successful. I'm not sure if your guests have seen that or if any of the other listeners have seen it out there.
Well, let me ask the guests. Jennifer Loving, Keeley, do you know the satire he's talking about Salt Lake City on The Daily Show?
We absolutely do. Actually, the Mother Jones publication recently featured a piece about Utah and the Silicon Valley. We're doing the same model as Utah. Utah has made some tremendous gains. They are using a housing first model. The difference between Utah and the Silicon Valley is the price of land and the ability to use federal subsidies because their market can bear accepting the federal subsidies. But we're doing the same thing here.
And I thank you for the call, David. We go right to another of your calls from San Jose. Ryan, welcome. You're on Forum.
Thank you. Yeah, my question kind of dovetails off the previous one. I just wanted the panel to answer, what are the arguments against Housing First? Because, it's, you know, with what Utah's doing, you know, being seemingly successful, what are the arguments that, against using an approach like that? You know, it costs so much more to have people out on the street.
Yeah, but the big argument for quite some time was that it costs too much to house people. So what other kind of counter-arguments do you hear, Keeley?
Well, sometimes we hear that individuals are not able to live independently, that they are still dealing with their recovery issues. I think that for us, most of the time, you know, housing is the foundation for recovery from, you know, substance abuse or just medical conditions. But, you know, I think one of the approaches that we have to have is to have a little flexibility, to always try to have housing first, but to have some other options for people who are not able to live independently even after multiple stints in housing. I think 1% of the time for us locally, people stay in housing for a year or more. But, you know, we have to be a little flexible. We have to understand and respond to each individual's needs. And we have to have all of those tools in our tool belt. So transitional housing programs, residential care facilities, the type of housing that Elizabeth mentioned earlier.
Again, Key Lee directs the Office of Supportive Housing in Santa Clara County. Here's Lance, who writes to us. I would estimate that a significant proportion of the homeless are the working homeless, those people making the minimum wage who cannot afford rents in the area. The top five high-tech firms in the Valley have hundreds of billions of dollars sitting in cash. It would not inflict any collective pain for these corporations to contribute $1 billion for affordable housing needed by those people who clean their office buildings. This would be social justice and good corporate citizenship. And here's Samita, who writes, does this study go into reasons why people are homeless? While providing housing to those in need is really important, I think we must also make a targeted effort to address the underlying causes. Jennifer Loving.
Prevention of homelessness is really important. I think that one of the really impressive things we learned in this study is that a majority of the people in our study were homeless for a short period of time, which really speaks to the resiliency of so many people. As Lance mentioned, are working poor, are homeless, are working are able to self-resolve their homelessness. And we should also be investing more in prevention, meaning helping people with rental payments before they become homeless, catching people before they fall into this cycle, which can end up more expensive than prevention and also much more costly on the family or the person.
Let me read a few more comments from listeners. This is a Facebook comment from Mike, who writes, I have great respect for the Housing First idea that seems to be gaining traction in some parts of the U.S. It's about time. If we look at the problem from a systems-level perspective, it might become clear that it would be both less costly and vastly better to simply provide housing. If one of the wealthiest areas of one of the most prosperous nations on the planet can't make it work, we have deeper problems. And Peter writes, for that kind of money, they could have built plenty of short-term housing. As it is, throwing money at a problem without any decent plan is a waste of money. And Stephanie from San Jose writes, I believe I remember there have been a few other cities, Portland, for example, who have housed their homeless before finding them jobs, etc. I know in some parts of these, in some of these, the stability allowed them to make forward motion in other parts of their lives. Do those experiments also back up your study? Keeley?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, for the last 3 years, the county, the city of San Jose, the Destination Home, our other partners have been implementing a community-wide permit supportive housing program that we call the Care Coordination Project. And this is a network of permit supportive housing resources targeting the most vulnerable individuals. And we are seeing that, you know, Housing First works. This study allows us to now just prioritize our scarce resources even more.
And I should mention, by the way, that the study is on our website. You can find it there, kqed.org, and that we've been talking to Jennifer Loving, who is Executive Director of Destination Home, a public-private partnership focused on ending homelessness in Santa Clara County, and Key Lee, who is Director of the Office of Supportive Housing with the Santa Clara County. And you can, of course, continue this discussion as well by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and we have another segment coming up. Let me thank you, Jennifer Loving, and thank you, Key Lee, for being with us from the South Bay this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And the other segment up ahead is going to be all about whales. There have been a number of them that have appeared on Northern California beaches. You don't talk about them as beach whales. You talk about them as stranded whales, but we'll find out, if we can, why this is happening. It's happening in numbers that have given a good deal of concern and alarm, and it's not only one species, the gray whale, that went through migrations. It's a number of different species, and we'll have some experts to talk about that, and of course we'll hear from you as well when we return on Forum. Stay tuned. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Michael Krasny.